everyone. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Entertainment. We have a fabulous director, Gabriel Theis. All right, I got it right this time. Welcome back. His short film, Nightlife, is available somewhere, but he'll tell you about that later. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back, and it's good to hear you pronounce my name right. We've made a lot of progress on that.
We have, which is a good thing, because I usually screw up everybody's name, but it's kind of like my thing now, I guess. Is this your first film you ever did, or is this just something you sent me?
No, this is just, this was the last short film I did before I embarked on these bigger projects. After this, I did a 40-minute movie, and then after that, I did a feature-length movie, which we talked about last time, The Curse of Professor Zerdonicus. But this is not my first short. I had done a lot of stuff in high school, and then I did a couple of things in college where I tried to really step up my game, right? And this is something I'd worked on for a long time. I worked on the idea, worked on the script, and the production process up to that point had been the biggest for me. So it represents a big step for me personally.
Now, you just said you were working in high school. Now, how does that work? I mean, you have no money in high school. At least I didn't have any money in high school. How do you decide you want to be a filmmaker in high school? And how do you go about being a filmmaker in high school?
Oh, God. It's just a process of getting a camera, whoever wants to help you, and making the best of your situation, right? I mean, that's the thing about being a filmmaker or being any kind of creative person. There are no rules. There's no such thing as a real movie, in my opinion. It's whatever you make work and whatever works for you. So, you know, I mean, I'm not going to pretend like anything I did in high school was good or worth watching, but it was a huge part of the process for me. And I think any filmmaker is going to have to start out, you know, with no resources, probably a shitty camera, only a couple of friends we're going to help you. And it's just like, that's where the challenge comes from. And that's what is going to test you and make you grow as a result. So I just made a lot of really bad horror movies. I made a lot of bad action movies, bad comedies, bad everything. You know, I tried to get the bad out of my system at that point.
This is a terrible question, but I would have to ask anyway. Did you succeed getting the bad out of you?
Well, I don't think that's entirely up for me to decide, right? I am happy that I've evolved from where I was at that point. And I don't think I've made anything shockingly amateurish since those early days. And I make things that I would be proud to put in front of an audience, which was not the case back then. Back then, I would have been totally embarrassed to show that to anyone.
But when you're making these films, before we even get to Nightlife, are you showing them in high school? Are you showing them to an audience? Who sees this stuff?
So we did have a YouTube channel that we posted to, and we would only ever get like 80 views would be a lot for us. I think there was one video we did where we actually got like 400, and that just felt like we did Avatar, Titanic. Those were big numbers for us, like 400 views on YouTube. So that's where we were at the time. I would show friends who were interested. And I think, you know, some of those videos got circulated around our family, and we'd get teased about them at some family dinners. We won't go into it, but yeah, so there was an audience. It just wasn't a widespread one.
So what decides you to make a short then? A 14-minute Nightlife short, very low production values. Not that that's hurting the film. It's just evident after you watch it. So how do you go from high school to this?
Well, it's a long journey, and there's not one straight path, right? It was just a series of projects, one that led me to the other. This is a case where I had an idea, and I realized that I wasn't ready to make it yet, and I really wanted to do justice to this particular script. So I waited on it, and I did a couple of other things to try to, you know, beef myself up a little bit more, try to, you know, work with the crew, work with something of a budget. This had a budget of $1,200, which, I mean, I'd never worked with the budget, so that was new for me. I would say it was just a case of, you know, again, just making whatever I could, getting feedback, absorbing that, and moving forward. And this is the product of a lot of feedback I had gotten, right, about my writing and my directing.
So as a $1,200 budget, I mean, you have to trim to even get anything located. I mean, from watching this film, you can correct me if I'm wrong, you seem to spend, I would say most of your budget was on the hand, or maybe even clothing, maybe the restaurant scene. The hand, there's a fake hand at one point in the film.
No, I don't think we spent, that was my producer. He had that. He had a lot of stuff in his inventory. I think, you know, we paid our cast and crew, which I was very proud of. That's, I think, where most of the money went to. The stuff that you think the money went to, we actually didn't have to pay for. We shot at a real restaurant at the end. It was a great location. I loved it, but we actually got that for free. No, I would say most of the money went to the crew. We bought a camera rig. We bought a cage for the camera that we were using. I think that was another big part of the money. And the mask, actually, if you'll let me. This mask right here.
Yeah, I know
that
it.
That was about $400. And we worked with a professional makeup artist who I couldn't have been happier with how that turned out. That was an actual quality thing. A mask in a slasher movie, I think most people agree, is just integral, right? It can make or break your slasher movie. And I was just very happy that we raised the money to spend on that mask.
So how did you decide how your mask is going to look? I mean, you're obviously a slasher movie fan. Mm-hmm. You've seen every kind of mask you can imagine. Why that mask?
Yeah, so that was a big question. What was the mask going to look like? Because I had no idea. And this movie is not just a slasher movie. It's kind of a dark take on the vigilante genre and superhero movies. Because I wrote this and made this at a time when superhero movies were just inescapable. And I wanted to see that dark take on them. I wanted to see the other side of them. I was thinking of that one scene in Batman Begins where Batman is like stalking these criminals who are, you know, trying to get their drugs shipped out or whatever. And it's like a horror movie for that one scene. And you're in the perspective of these criminals, right, who are getting taken out one by one. So I actually looked to the design of Venom's mask, Venom and Carnage, of course, the famous villains of Spider-Man. And if you see here, it's not complete like translation, but we kind of went for the bug eyes. We kind of went for, there's a bit of a grin here. Originally, I actually wanted the mouth to be wider to go even more for that kind of cackly look. But we decided to tone it down a little bit because we didn't want, again, people to just think about Venom. But it was basically a cross between Venom and, you know, this kind of green Grim Reaper skull type of look.
Okay, you're bringing up Spider-Man villains a lot. Is Spider-Man one of your influences for your filmmaking?
The first Spider-Man movie made by Sam Raimi is like my big, is what got me into movies. That is like my Star Wars. That was a completely transformative experience. I was only 4 when that came out, but it's just stuck with me ever since. And of course, I've gone back to watch Sam Raimi's horror movies like Evil Dead and Darkman. That was another big influence for me. Darkman is very underrated gem. But Spider-Man comic book characters in general, but Spider-Man was the one that got me started on it all.
Now, so when you're making your film, you know you want to do somewhat of a vigilante film. Your actors, you're very low budget. Are these friends of yours or did you actually do a casting call?
We did a casting call. Now, a lot of the actors were people I'd worked with previously. So the actor playing the lead kind of criminal, you know, who's kind of our final girl, right, in slasher movie terms, I'd worked with him previously. And we went through a couple of actors for that role, but he was the guy, right? I could just tell from working with him that he really fit that role. And there was another person in there who, he didn't consider himself an actor, but I saw him in one project he did for a friend. And I just love the charisma, because sometimes non-actors can be more natural than actors. So I wanted him to bring that same energy to my project. So I actually wrote a role specifically for him. And the guy who plays Nightlife, our villain, he actually, I did not meet him until the casting call. He's the only person in the cast who I had not known until he auditioned.
Wow. So that, like, your main character of the short, not that the other guys aren't important, you didn't know him? That's kind of weird. I thought for sure he'd be like, yeah, this is my buddy from high school. He was perfect.
No, no. I mean, we took this very seriously. We put out an audition. We wanted to get the best actor. He gave the best audition. And that's how his part came to be. Now he's, again, the outlier in that situation because I had worked with everyone else previously. But yeah, he is an example of somebody we just found through the audition process.
So when you're on a very micro-budget film, how much time do you spend on retakes? I mean, the parking garage could not have been an easy shot to get sometimes. I mean, a car going by or something, I don't know, a noise in the background.
We spent an hour and a half in that parking garage, shooting in that parking garage.
I thought so. It looks so, when people see the film, like, oh yeah, it's only like 5 minutes. I'm like, no, there's so much more I want to know.
I mean, honestly, I'm surprised it didn't take longer. Usually that can take up to, 5 hours. 5 minutes could take up to 5 hours. We had a schedule we had to meet, so me and the DP talked it out, and we were able to combine a lot of shots and consolidate them and just make the shooting schedule a lot more concise for ourselves. So I was very happy with how that day turned out.
Hold on. That was just one day. You only shot the parking garage, took one day to shoot that whole scene?
That was just, again, that was an hour and a half. And we shot that after part of the alleyway scene. So we had 5 days, 5 shooting days, 3 hours every day, because we can only pay people for that much time. And yeah, so it took 15 hours to film this movie. Yeah, 15 hours in total.
So was the restaurant scene the hardest scene to shoot because of the lighting, or was the outdoor shots harder? I mean, the parking garage had weird lighting.
The restaurant scene, that was easy. I mean, that was, we came in with a game plan about lighting. And again, we just had a location that was already kind of perfect to begin with. I mean, the atmosphere, that neon sign, everything, So thankfully we didn't have to do as much, right? But that was an easy scene. I would say the hardest scene, the alleyway was a big scene, and that's where a lot of the action takes place, and just framing things correctly and making sure things cut together. We just had to, and we didn't have that much time to shoot it. So that was the most challenging. It wasn't that difficult because, again, we had talked a lot and really planned things out beforehand, but that was the most challenging part.
Now, I guess the token, I don't want to really ruin the film, but you know what I'm referring to when I say the token. Who provided the token, or did you already know what it was going to be when you wrote the script?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. That is a funny story. So there was a last minute rewrite that had to be done because a previous idea had fallen through, I'll just say. So that was from my personal library. The actors still kind of tease me for it to this day, because if you watch the movie, it is a little bit, had we more of a budget, I would have loved to have gone out and bought something, but, just a broke college student at the time with $1,200. So, that was a case. Yeah. Where I would have loved to have had some more money, but it is what it is. Right.
Was there ever a shot, a rewrite where the situation at the end ended differently?
Yeah, so we went through a few endings. Obviously, the ending is kind of open, right? It's not so much of a hard stop as it is just, we cease to watch the events of this story. But there were a couple different ways it could have gone. I think there were 5 rewrites of the ending before we got to the version that is on screen. And slight variations, right? Like in the first draft, the couple was a lot more jokey and they were being a lot more flirtatious with each other. And we decided, the girlfriend should be upset. She should be mad at him and they should deal with that. Because that's another kind of callback to superhero movies, right? Like the girlfriend is mad at the guy because he's off fighting crime. And he comes back and he can't explain why he was late to dinner. So that's kind of like a a perverted kind of twist off of that trope.
Very interesting. So how long does your writing process take, even for a 14-minute script? I mean, do you – obviously you understand that you have an idea. You have to get a mask. You have to get costume design. I mean, all that stuff needs to be incorporated into your script before you actually even go, okay, we're going to go ahead and do this. So does all that go through your mind while you're writing?
I would say I start just writing, you know, what I want to see on screen, and then we scale it back from there. Then we decide, okay, we can't do this. We need to rewrite that, right? But I try to write a very pure first draft that is free from, you know, the worries and anxieties of a low-budget production. I know going into that draft that I'm not going to be writing like a helicopter explosion or like any of that kind of stuff, but I definitely just wanted to make the best version of the story I can. Then we're going to scale it back. We're going to retweak things to make it more realistic for us. In terms of my writing process, I typically write 10 pages a day. So for that, writing the drafts, that was not time consuming. It was the rewrites and just the revisions and going back and forth between my producer and other people on the team just to make sure we had the best draft possible for our production. That took the most time.
So even in a college production, you have music. So who'd you get your music from?
So that was a combination of a couple of different people, actually. There are two kinds of scores you'll hear. There's a synth score kind of reminiscent of John Carpenter that was done by a good friend of mine, Cal Bernardo. He's another filmmaker and a musician, and that was very much in his style. So we worked together on that. Then the metal guitar was done by a friend of mine who actually had I had a band with him in high school. We were called Skunk Analysis, and he was a great guitarist, man. So I called him up and I said, I would really love like just a kick-ass kind of metal soundtrack for some of these scenes, you know? So he just would send me over stuff. It was always golden. And there was one piece actually that was done by me, the very last piece, the very last thing you hear during the last couple seconds of the movie. I specifically did that part, but I think that's the only thing I did. Everything else was done by one of those two composers.
Now, this is
I have to give him a shout out. Sorry. Eric Mendez is my friend's name. Just had to give him a shout out.
Of course. Of course. Now, are we going to see a documentary on your band ever?
We never played a show. I would go to his house. We would play. We would practice in his room. His grandma would give me Oreos. It was a good time, but I don't think we would have much interest in a documentary about the story of Skunk Analysis now.
That's a great name, though. I figured there had to be some more behind that.
Well, you know, the great thing is someday I can make a movie about a band and they can be Skunk Analysis. So Skunk Analysis will live on. So don't worry about that.
After you finish up a project, do you still talk to your actors afterwards? You're like, okay, thanks for working with me. If I need you again, I'll call you.
Oh, well, it just depends on the relationships you form. I mean, that, you know, it's not like you all sign up to be each other's best friends afterwards, right? It's a professional production. Sometimes you form friendships. Sometimes they remain professional. I'd say everyone in that cast I've remained in contact with, though, to some extent.
Okay. So you're in college. You got the film done. How long does it take you to edit something like this?
The editing was a very frustrating process, especially because I think anybody who's done low production stuff knows that sound, it's just, you got to take care of your sound, man, because that's going to bite you in the ass. And that was the entire, like, if we had taken care of our sound, good care of our sound through production, that thing would have been finished at least 3 months earlier. But I was trying to do it on my own. I was calling people in, and it was just I'm still obviously frustrated about the sound in the finished product. And it was just a big takeaway that I had from this film is I just got to take care of my sound. So the editing process in total, that took 5 months, which was dedicated to sound and color correction.
Now, when you did your first feature length film, did you feel that this prepared you to work on your sound and be ready for color corrections? Like, did it prep you for that in the future?
Well, see, we made a found footage film for my feature. And I'm not going to say I cheated, but I created a framework, a storytelling framework that kind of was more forgiving of technical things like color correction, right? And of sound. The sound in my feature is a lot better, but that's because we were able to use lapel mics, right? And in universe, that makes sense, right? It's a fake documentary. So the sound was a lot better. I'll say that when I have to go back to traditional filmmaking, the sound is going to be the first thing I budget for, you know, just getting a good sound guy, getting a good sound mixer, right?
So did you send this to film festivals, or is this just was shown at your local campus, or what was the final plan for it?
I mean, we sent it to festivals. We got into one in Oregon, and I think it was nominated for maybe best horror short there or something. I didn't even know that we got into that festival, actually. I just, we had sent it off. I hadn't been hearing back. And then I decided to kind of follow up with some of these festivals, and I just saw my name and the film's name on their website. So I was like, okay, cool. Wow. I mean, it had already screened by that point. So it was kind of a weird feeling, but yeah, we sent it off to festivals. Then after it went through that circuit, posted it on YouTube, and you know, it's there for anybody to go and watch. This is not the final form of this idea. This is, again, a concept that I have been working many times. This is me taking a first stab, no pun intended, at this concept, right? Because I have big plans for it, but I wanted to start working on it, start really pen to paper.
Okay, well, I'm going to go right. Oh, wait, have you been working on anything else before I go to fun questions?
So I have a couple of things in development. I can't go into details, many of which, but I'm very excited about the future. I'm also hoping to kick off my next feature film project, hopefully by winter of this year. But we're still working on the script. We're still putting together the budget. But I am pretty excited about how things are going to turn out. So thank you.
Okay, we're off to fun questions. Everybody, just so you know, he did tell you where to find your film, YouTube, Nightlife, and you can promote your other film at the end, I promise. Okay, your first question. One film goal for this year.
One film goal. I would say to have distributed my feature debut, The Curse of Professor Zurdonicus, on DVD and Blu-ray, because one of the exciting things is that we have actually partnered with a distribution company. So you will be seeing that on some more platforms and on physical media. So that is my big goal, is to have that on DVD by the end of the year.
Okay. Just so you know, in Canada, we still don't have movie theaters open, but soon, they tell me, soon. So what was the first film you saw in the theater?
Ever?
No, right now. Like, you've been, haven't you?
Oh, you mean since movie theaters opened back up?
Yes.
Okay. It was the new Saw movie, the Chris Rock Saw movie, Spiral. Yes.
What did you think?
I did not. I don't know. I just, I had expectations that it was going to be at least different than the other Saw movies because of Chris Rock, and I thought he would take it in an interesting direction. And he kind of did, but I don't think it lived up to its full potential. I think it still fell back into familiar territory, being the ninth film, Jesus, in a franchise. You know, it just felt too familiar for my taste. I wanted something totally different.
We are in complete agreement. And your favorite film of last year?
Last year is such a blur, man. I don't know. I mean, what came out last year? I'm thinking back to what won all the... Promising Young Woman. There we go. Promising Young Woman, absolutely, was my favorite film of last year.
Now, being an independent filmmaker, we discussed right there, that is probably the perfect independent film. I mean, it was very well done, very limited budget at times. Obviously, it had a big budget because it had big stars that you recognize, but I would say that's a pretty good big feature indie.
I honestly don't know what the budget of that was. I wouldn't be surprised if it cost only a couple million or 10 million, depending on how big those salaries were, right? It did have a great cast, but the direction was fierce. The screenwriting, I mean, it just, I people complain that, you know, movies are getting political now. I don't know. I mean, movies are about what, it's about the zeitgeist. It's about reflecting our current, what we're thinking about and what we're going through. So I thought it was just a perfect movie, a perfect reflection of our times, and just a damn good thriller. I can't think of a horror movie that had me on the edge of my seat more than Promising Young Woman.
Do you feel that your filmmaking will get political in the future?
I think it already is. I think I had an element in Nightlife that was, I find the vigilante subgenre to be a little troubling in that it asks you to not empathize with people, to just enjoy the sight of people being murdered, right? Because they're bad people. And to me, that is kind of, we have a lot of people out there who are trying to dehumanize people right now. And I'm not saying it's a political satire, but that's definitely something I had in mind to say, well, you're talking about dehumanizing people for entertainment, but what if you what's the narrative? What if you see it from their side of the story? Is it still fun to see these people get killed? So there was at least that was something I was thinking about. But I am totally open to making overtly political entertainment in the future. I mean, I think Get Out did that brilliantly, and I think that's going to inspire a whole new wave of things. I would love a Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie where the cannibalistic family is running to be in the Texas House or the Texas Senate so they can legalize cannibalism, you know? So,
I think you have your next movie idea right there. I think that's great.
Well, if any producers hear this, you know, and you want another Texas Chainsaw movie.
Okay. So before, hey, they need to get a hold of you. Where do they find you?
So you can find me on Twitter, Instagram at Gabe Theis, Theis spelled T-H-E-I-S, or you can find me on Facebook. You can stalk me. I have no stalkers, and that's really hurting my self-esteem. So please come down to Houston and stalk me. But yeah, social media, find me on IMDb or my website, GabrielTheis.com. And yeah, just give me a shout out, y'all. Just give me a shout out.
Thank you for your time. As always, you were awesome. Have a great evening.
Thanks for having me again.